Welcome to the Nurture Hub Pregnancy and Birth Podcast with your hosts, Shari Lyon and Nicola Lay.
Together, we bring over 30 years of experience in working with women and partners through education, breathing, mindfulness, and evidence-based information, and nurturing you through this transformation into motherhood.
Join us on this journey as we connect with women and partners, mentoring, supporting, and navigating the ups and downs of becoming parents.
Welcome to episode 32. Shari, we've been lost for a while.
We have, yes. We'd just like to take this moment to apologise that we have not actually released any episodes in the last couple of months. Can we just say that this year has been...
Busy as.
Yeah, it has been.
Yeah.
Really, really busy.
Yeah.
I've had home renovations. I am teaching 3 or 4 courses a month, private clients. It's just been really hard actually to get us both together where we're both free, because Nicola, your online breathing programs have just taken off since last year too, haven't you?
Yeah. And my husband broke his neck and is back surfing. So yeah, the year just felt like it just... We had great intentions and then it just kind of fell into
madness. It still feels like it should be February for me.
Same. And let's not forget, there's many babies being born because of COVID now, which we kind of anticipate that would happen.
Yeah, there is actually. Gosh, I think I've already taught just this year over 150 couples.
Yeah, right. And then, you know, just the phone's just off the hook with anxiety. Like, there is so much anxiety, so many women, you know, just dealing with feeling the effects of COVID in their pregnancy with the care, you know, all the carers that they're working with, the midwives, the obstetricians. It's continuous.
A lot. There is a lot of, there's not as much support anymore. Well, no. Especially through the public systems here in Australia, I'm noticing. So I too am getting a lot of calls from clients. They're asking me questions because they don't even know when their next appointment is.
That's right.
Yeah, I've got mums who 28, 29 weeks and they've only met with a midwife once.
Yes.
And there isn't another appointment until like 36 weeks.
Yeah, and that's exactly, I mean, only just the other day with the client who said this is her second baby and she hasn't even had, you know, a checkup. Like, it's been really, and it's all been via text. And also now that you can't, you know, especially here on the Gold Coast, they can't call the desk if they're going into labour. So it's all done through a Medicare line, isn't it, now?
Or they have to present to MAC where they're assessed and either told to just go home. So, yeah, there has been a lot of shifts and changes over the last 12 months for everybody, some not for the better. And we're really, for the work that we do, I think we're really noticing the pick up in women wanting more support, more information, and just reassurance. I think that's a big thing, is just reassurance.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of why I've been really busy, because women are feeling that pressure and anxiety and they're looking to be able to manage that as best they can. And, you know, the breathing has been really popular because they're able just to use their breath to sort of regulate their nervous system and feel better. But I mean, like, what are you seeing the most common sort of thing that's coming up for you with people that you're working with?
Well, recently, within the last few months, it's recommendation of induction of labor for either a suspected big baby, but I'm also have clients who are being recommended induction for a suspected small baby. This is something that I'm almost every week, it's either one end of the spectrum or the other, either baby's too big or either baby is measuring too small. It's kind of like, if you're not within that perfect
tick box,
and that's the thing. I don't get it. How do they determine for each individual woman what size is perfect, what size baby is perfect for their body?
Yes.
So I'm finding it really confusing in trying to understand why they're so wanting to, they're pressuring women to be induced. And upon reflection of, you know, a lot of the clients that I've taught over the years, and maybe the women who have agreed and gone with the medical advice to be induced, then it turns into a cascade of intervention, which then turns into trauma, which then, but their baby is born and the baby is a perfect size and totally healthy.
Yes. Yeah. And that's actually something that we're seeing a lot of and have done actually since COVID, to be fair, hasn't it? You know, where they're sort of assuming that that mum's got a big baby or the smaller baby, and they start to put the fear into the possibility of what's around that.
Mm.
So what are you seeing? What's the kind of things that you're hearing within that? Like what are the mums saying to you?
Well, in the last month, I've had 3 or 4 women contact me who are being advised to be induced at 39 weeks for a suspected small baby. Normally, it's on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
That tends to be the more, I don't know whether you say popular suggestion.
It is common. Yeah.
Common suggestion for a suspected big baby. Mm. But now I'm finding a lot of for a suspected small baby. And I guess I'd love to just unpack this, talk about it, and please, for anyone listening, please do not interpret any of the information that we're sharing today as medical advice. This, we always recommend that if you are being suggested that for induction for big or small baby or any kind of induction, that you approach with your caregivers with questions so that you feel you're making an informed decision. So this information that we're sharing at the moment is just more for informational purposes. But I think the reason why I'd love to talk about this topic is to help stimulate the questions within yourself so that you can go to your caregivers with confidence to be able to ask them, well, is this actually the right choice for us?
Yeah, and not being afraid to ask those questions. And I think this is where this comes to that sort of, you know, they're better than me, they know more than me, but essentially you're the person carrying this child. You're the mum, and it's really important to be able to have these really open questions that you're as important as them. They're here to facilitate a safe birth for you, and you should be able to ask. I think you need to ask questions when someone's asking you to be induced.
And I think we need to also look at it at being that we are not all the same. Every one of us is different. We are all different sizes. Our pelvis is different sizes. Our babies are the same. Our babies are not going to be the same. Sorry. Our babies will be different sizes. Mm. And our body will grow a baby that's, I believe, perfect size for us.
Yes.
And there's always going to be babies on all like areas of the spectrum. There will be babies that are just small babies. It doesn't mean that they're not healthy, that they're not growing. There'll also be babies that are bigger babies.
Yes.
Because that's just either the genetics of the parents, or so it's kind of, I'm seeing like if you're not within this perfect weight range for baby, it's if you're not in that box, if you're outside of that box, which I don't even know what they class as perfect size now, because you know, we as humans, we are getting bigger.
Yes.
You know, we are getting taller. When you look at the generations past, at our grandparents, my grandma's like 5 foot, nothing, and I'm like 5'10".
Yes.
So, you know, it's, we have to kind of look at it and go, well, and please know there is always a valid reason for induction if there is a baby who isn't growing. So that's restricted fetal growth.
Yes.
If it can be proven. But what I'm finding from the clients that I'm actually coaching and connecting with right now is that they are having regular scans because there was, you know, a bit of a concern, babies measuring a bit smaller. But through the scans, they're showing that the baby is growing. So the baby is growing to their perfect size, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, so the baby's developing, growing as it should, but just slower than what is the normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think some questions that we would recommend that you ask before just agreeing to being induced for a suspected small or big baby is, one, asking, well, what is the accuracy of these scans, of these measurements? Because we spoke about this with Dr. Rachel Reed in episode 13. So if you haven't listened to that episode, please, please, please go back and listen to that episode. It's probably one of the most downloaded episodes of our entire podcast. Mm. And I send that link to all of my clients to listen to. I personally even listened to it over and over again. And even in Rachel Reed's book, Why Induction Matters, Dr. Rachel Reed is a researcher, so she's looked at all the research, and she states that there is actually no accurate way of measuring or weighing a baby until they are born. Measuring a baby by palpating, so that's whether your midwife or caregiver feels your belly, or measuring with the tape measure from the pubic bone up, is incorrect more than 50% of the time. And now they are doing obviously ultrasounds, where they measure the abdomen. Yes. But again, this is only an estimate within around about 15% of the baby's actual weight. So if you have a baby that is 8 pounds, for example, the estimation could be anywhere between 6 pounds 13 ounces and 9 pounds 3 ounces.
So it's quite off, isn't it?
So there is a big
margin, isn't
there? Margin, yeah, there is. Mm. So when I have clients coming to me saying my baby's already 2.4 kilos, I'm like,
how do you know that? That's not actually
did they put a weigh up you? Like, that you can't. And then they start talking about percentages, 90th percentile, 98th percentile. And now I'm hearing the other end of the spectrum of mums going, my baby's only in the 30th percentile or the 10th percentile. So there's always going to be babies. There has to be babies on one end and then the other end of the spectrum, but it doesn't mean that they're not healthy for them.
That's right.
Because no baby is the same.
No. And I love the fact that you said that, you know, we create a baby that's perfect for our body. You know, we're not going to create a baby that we just cannot birth. And women do have big babies. Women do have small babies. I mean, I had both my babies were small. They were long, but they were small.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, yeah, there was always that monitoring for me, especially with my first, that she was a slow grower as well, you know. She just was long, but, you know, really small. And I guess having the hypnobirthing really helped me to have the voice of, well, show me the statistics, show me, you know, tell me what that means. And listening to them just, you know, really helped me to understand, be able to ask those questions, feel empowered to ask those questions and not be frightened to even say what was on my mind, because I didn't want the fear to be in, you know, to come into my mindset.
Yeah. And that's also where you can ask for a second scan. You can ask for a second test. You can get a second opinion as well if you're not feeling that the caregiver that you're currently with is giving you enough information. Because this is what I've also found, is that when my clients have gone in and they've started to ask these questions, well, is my baby growing? Yes, your baby is growing. So my baby's not stopped growing, so therefore it's not restricted fetal growth necessarily. No, we just are concerned that the baby's smaller and we should get the baby out at 39 weeks. But this is where it's important to then have the conversation around, okay, well, what are the benefits if we induce the labor? What are the benefits to the baby? What are the benefits to mother? What are the risks? What are the risks if we continue the pregnancy and if our baby does stop growing?
Yeah.
What are the risks? But this is where it's really important to also ask the questions of what are the risks of the induction itself? Because from what I've learned and understand, and I've actually seen this, my cousin Sharon, who we had on the podcast early on, who shared her birth story, she grows small babies. She's had 3 babies. All of her babies have been classed as small.
So what's small?
Well, I think her boys were like in the, you know, 25th to 30th percentile. Mm. And when she fell pregnant last year with Isla, again, there was a concern that Isla was small. So, and they actually thought that Isla had stopped growing. So, because she went from being like in the 15th percentile, so really small, into the 10th. And even they threw the number of the 6th percentile out there to her.
Wow.
But she had a really good midwife. She was in a midwifery group, practice birth center model of care, and that was that round about that 32-week mark. And so she agreed to some regular scans, and on the scans they saw that Isla was growing.
Great.
And so her midwife was like, "No, I'm happy with that. We know from your history with your other two, you grow small babies." Mm. Now this is where something that I really noticed, and when I actually heard Rachel Reed talk about, and even within her book that I've read, and I share this information in my classes, is when you understand the physiology of birth and understanding how our body hormonally works, with physiology and physiological birth, where our body goes into labor through the natural hormone release of the oxytocin. Oxytocin is released in bursts, and it is it can be stimulated and affected by how our baby's coping with the labor, how our environment and how we feel. So that is when in a physiological birth, the contraction pattern can be altered to suit the needs of your baby, what your baby needs, you need. And that is also why you find it common when you go to the hospital that your labor may slow down because of the environmental change. So it's your body adapts to the changing needs of your baby. And this is something that I really recognized in Sharon's birth. When I was attending her at home, I was there just supporting her at home. And, you know, once again, they've set these kind of normal expectations of the different stages or phases of labor, that active labor is kind of where you're consistently having 2 to 3 surges within a 10-minute period lasting about a minute. And when I was with Sharon at home, her contraction pattern never got to that. Her surges were lasting and even over a minute, but they were spaced out and they would go from 6 minutes apart to 8 minutes apart, and then they'd come back down to 6 minutes. And I was sitting there questioning, going, well, I don't know, are you progressing? Is this active labor? Because again, and look, I did the expectation of going, well, normal signs of active labor are you should be having 2 to 3 contractions within a 10-minute period. But I could see by her mannerisms and her emotions and her dropping in, and I could see her going inward, you know.
Yes,
and
she was transitioning, wasn't she?
In active labor, that is where the oxytocin and endorphins are at their peak. And that oxytocin and endorphins, you just see it with a woman who has been left untouched and alone. She goes somewhere else. Mm. She goes inward. And I could see Sharon doing that for each surge, even though they were still spaced out. And she was expressing like they're getting more intense. And so I ended up leaving her and her husband, Guy, and it was not even within an hour after I left that she made the call and was like, I feel like I need to go in. So again, there is that instinct, that knowing. Her midwife was a bit like, well, if you really – and she was really supportive. She wasn't like, no, stay at home because you're not at that active labor pattern yet. And she went in, and sure enough, she was 8 centimeters.
Wow.
And again, her – contraction pattern, though, and this is what's also quite normal for physiological birth, is actually when we get to the pushing phase that the contraction pattern, the contractions do space out even more.
Yes.
To give the baby more of a rest time between the really intense, strong contractions, because when our uterus is contracting, it's actually contracting onto the placenta. And when the placenta is being contracted onto, there is a drop in oxygen to the baby.
Yes.
And during those big pushing contractions where all the muscles have been like drawn up to the fundus and the fundus starts to push the baby down, it's very normal for physiological birth that those pushing contractions are spaced out.
Yes.
So that in between the contraction, the placenta can recover from being contracted onto and keep supplying the baby with oxygen. Her contraction pattern never got to 2-3 minutes apart that I understand. And when Isla was born, she was little. She was actually her biggest baby, ended up being her biggest baby. So what they thought, at one stage they thought she was on like the 10th percentile. She ended up being on the 30th. So again, there is just another, you know, there's that it's not accurate, necessarily accurate if you have had a scan or they can be wrong. And when I looked back and I actually sat down and did a bit of a debrief with Sharon, and it was even a few months later that we talked about, and I said, your body adapted your contraction pattern to suit the needs of Isla because she was small. Mm. Maybe if she was a bigger baby, and bigger babies who have more fat, that they can cope more with a contraction pattern that is more intense and more close together. Mm. So now we've kind of spoken about that, we need to also then understand, well, what is in the risks of inducing the labor? Because induction of labor is very different on the body. It is not natural labor. It is not natural birth.
No.
Because induction of labor is where they hook you up via a drip, and it's you're getting a synthetic form of oxytocin called syntocinin, or if you're in the United States, it's called Pitocin. So because it's just being consistently dripped into the body, it cannot be altered by feedback, by what your baby needs, you need, and your environment. Mm. So this is why one of the main risks of inducing labor is with syntocinin is the risk of fetal distress.
Absolutely. Because, that was me.
Yeah, because the contraction pattern can become too strong, mm-hmm. with less gap, not enough recovery time for the placenta, and also so your baby can start to go into distress.
Absolutely.
So this is this risk is for all
men, inductions.
All inductions.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, when I'm working with these women and they're being advised, okay, well, we should induce labor for a small baby. When I do coach them and say, okay, well, let's just sit down and maybe work out some questions that you can take to your caregiver. Let's get them to give you evidence-based information, because we need to also look at, well, what are the risks of inducing the labor on your small baby? Could that end up with your baby possibly going into distress, which then doubles your rate of cesarean from 12.5% to 26%. Wow. This is what the evidence shows. Induction, yes, of labor doubles the risk of cesarean, because it's not that if a baby goes into distress during an induced labor, they can turn that syntocinin down and it then will space out the contraction pattern. But then it's not able to create effective enough contractions to open the cervix. Yes. So if they turn it back up, baby's getting into distress again, turn it back down. That's when they go, well, it's not really safe to continue the induction because baby's not coping. So let's just take you in for a cesarean. So this is, I'm sharing this information with you in the hope that if you are being recommended induction for a small or for a big baby, that you can confidently go in and actually ask these questions in saying, okay, well, is my baby not growing? Are they restricted fetal growth? When you say my baby's too big, what are the risks of having a big baby? You know, and they may say to you, well, the risk of having a big baby is the risk of shoulder dystocia. But then they don't tell you that induction of labor with syntocinin increases the risk of shoulder dystocia as well. So,
yes, it's that tick boxing again, and it's that grey area. And I understand that for caregivers, that grey area is a bit met with a lot of uncertainty, and that's their fear. And they're just giving you their sort of take on what they see and what they know for their own sort of background of what they've already been through and what they see with patients every day. But I feel that the other part of this is a fear-based kind of feeling that arrives into the body. And then as soon as you're given those statistics or you're given that pressure, you're starting to already then make a story in your head about what's coming, what your body's got to go through. You start to worry about, is my baby going to be okay? What does induction look like? And they're sort of met with so much uncertainty, and the power of what is the natural route is sort of taken away, because then now you're being told that your body's not doing the right thing, your baby's not growing the way it should. And how does that feel, knowing that you're walking into birth with those feelings? Like the fear, that fear infusion is not ideal for birthing a baby. You can't, the oxytocin won't arrive naturally. It's quite worrying for me on the side of mental health, is that I deal with the women that are in so much fear walking into induction. And I know that because I've been induced twice, so I know what that feels like. And you know, you really do need to have amazing support around you if you do need to go into induction. Mm. And inductions can sometimes turn out fine.
Yeah.
But, you know,
it takes preparation.
It does. And really good caregivers, like great midwives, great obstetricians to be able to make that induction really be a positive outcome. Mm. So it's difficult, isn't it, to help women that are feeling the fear of this.
Mm. Yep. And this is, again, where the policies of the hospital are not based on an individual basis. It's a one-size-fits-all. So the policy may say if the baby is under a certain percentage of birth weight that they recommends induction, but you need to look at your own case, right? We're not all the same. Our babies are not all the same. Mm. And ask all the questions so that you feel confident in that if you feel that it's safest to induce the labor, then you're coming from a place not of a fear-based or feeling like you've been coerced or led into the induction without being given all the information, but you feel yes, we've had a number of scans, we can see babies only growing marginally, there possibly could be a medical condition and reason, and we're not disputing that that doesn't happen.
No.
And but it also then you need to then look at, what is this induction going to possibly look like? What could it turn out like? What do I need to prepare myself mentally and physically for this induction?
Yes.
What are my options around the induction when it comes to the different types of induction? Do they have to go straight for syntocinin?
There's so many parts of induction, and it's really important to understand what induction looks like. Talk to your caregiver about the ways that they would do an induction, because you've really got to know all the steps, because it's a different process than a natural progression or birth, isn't it?
It is. Mm. So just feeling confident in yourselves, and also trust your instinct. You know what's funny? The women that I've actually been consulting with, and these are clients who have done my hypnobirthing program with me, is that instinctually they're going, I feel like this baby just needs more time. I don't think there's anything wrong with my baby. I'm just growing a small baby. But yet the outside noise of this is what we want to do to you. And so therefore it kind of makes them feel like, do they trust in their body and what their instincts is telling them? Or do they put all their trust in their caregivers, who may be right, but they may also be wrong as well? And what if their baby is born a perfect size? I recently actually shared, it was maybe a few months ago, a post on my Instagram, and the number of women who shared that they were recommended or were induced for either a suspected big or small baby, who then their babies were perfect size. I even had one mum be told that her baby was really small, you know, only 2.5 kilos, ended up birthing a 9-pound baby. And she's like, they got it wrong on the other side with me. I also have had women, and we had her on our podcast last year, one of my mums who was not suspected to have a big baby, ended up birthing a 4.8 kilo baby, all natural, no drugs, and didn't tear.
That's right.
So having the confidence in yourself as well that
absolutely
we can birth big babies. We actually just need to learn how and be supported in that, because
absolutely,
again, the effects of induction on a bigger baby could be that because the contraction pattern is so close together, it's long, it's a lot more intense than physiological birth, that these bigger babies don't have the rest periods either to be able to make the internal rotations and movements that they need to do through the pelvis. Then it becomes too intense, you end up having an epidural, you end up on your back, which then closes the size of your pelvis a further 20%, and so we're not creating space for our big babies when we're in that position, in a supine position laying on our back.
That's right.
And this is not what caregivers talk about. It's not what women think about. Well, what are the effects going to be on the big baby? They're wanting to induce this suspected big baby, but what effects, and then what road could that lead down? Because then you end up having a cesarean because this bigger baby can't fit through the pelvis because you're not able to create the space for the baby.
There's so many different pathways from this. So if you're listening to this thinking, well, you know, that really resonates with me. I'm carrying a baby that's smaller and I'm feeling a little bit of pressure, having to go for more scans. Just start knowing that you can ask these questions, start feeling empowered in your body, in your baby, talk to your baby, you know, start thinking, how can I mentally prepare for what's ahead of me? Do I feel safe with my caregivers? Do they make me feel that it's going to be okay? Do you feel connection with them? And the same on the other side of being with a child that is, you know, they're saying is a bigger baby, just ensuring that you feel that you've got the trust in your body, the trust in the caregivers around you, and having those really big open discussions about what does induction look like. And, you know, induction was a path that I had to take because I was at 42 weeks with an apparently small baby. She was quite small, but, you know, we went to 42 weeks because I asked for that time. And induction was the only way for me because she wasn't going to come here otherwise. And if I'd known what induction looked like for me 9 years ago, I would have had a lot more things in place. But my birth was great for what it needed to be. And that's because I did the time to research on how I wanted to turn up for my birth, what I could have, implement all the tools to help me and support me in my mindset. And it worked. So don't feel it to be negative. Just keep thinking, right, how can I help myself here, rather than feel disempowered coming out of every meeting with an obstetrician or a caregiver.
And then it's after the experience, only then you start asking questions.
Yes.
And that's where that can play on you after post-birth and going, I should have asked.
I could have.
Yes. What if all of those. So,
yeah, great conversation to start, you know, thinking about these questions, knowing that, you know, listen back to episode 13 with Rachel Reed. It's a brilliant, brilliant podcast that we did with her, and she's such a powerful woman in the birthing industry. And
she has her own podcast now, which I highly recommend.
Midwife's Cauldron, I think it's called, isn't it?
Midwife's Cauldron, yeah. And it is, love amazing the information woman. That she's sharing. And we're going to a workshop at the end of this month.
Yeah, we'll probably do a podcast on that, actually.
Yeah, I think we will. We'll do a bit of a review of the workshop with her. She's actually just released a new book. So it's I think we want to come from a place as well in that this is what we're seeing come up with the women that we're working with. So we are assuming as well that it could be coming up for you. And if you are prepared for that as well, then hopefully this podcast has maybe helped stimulate questions or given you some confidence in or inspired you to go and do your own research. Mm-hmm. You know, get Rachel Reed's book, look up evidence-based information. There is so much information out there, and for you to then take the information that you have found to your medical caregivers and say, this is what I found. Can you please explain to me from your medical perspective, like what evidence-based information do you have? Because if they're recommending something, if they're saying your risk of XYZ rises, they have to be referring to a study, but also understand that there are studies that are very biased as well. So you're actually better off looking at what is called Cochrane reviews. So you can Google that, Cochrane review on induction of labor for a suspected small baby, or a Cochrane review for induction of labor for a suspected big baby. There's so much information that we have available to us at our fingertips now, that could be really useful for you to be able to stimulate questions and go to your appointments prepared with the questions, write them down, prepare for your appointments, because I've had this happen as well where women have gone in, oh, I'm just going up for a normal checkup, haven't had any kind of preparation of questions to ask or have conversations to have, and then before they know it, they're walking out in tears because caregivers are telling them they're going to be doing things to them, and then everything kind of goes out the window because it's quite intimidating and can be, you know, a bit of a shock in that moment. Whereas if you have a list of questions written down, in just keep them in your bag for every appointment, if they are recommending something, get that notepad out and start to go through the brain technique. What are the benefits? What are the risks? Is there an alternative? Trust your instinct and ask for time. And what if you do nothing?
And when you do come with these questions, they are looking at you like, well, this mum really wants to be able to do this well. And she's already on to it. So, and that shows them that you're, you know, you're doing your homework, you're getting prepared, you know, and they will respect that. Well, thanks for listening today, and we can't wait to start these more regularly now.
Yeah. And please, if you like this information, if you are loving our podcast or past episodes, we'd love for you to subscribe. And even if you could leave a review for us or share on Instagram, tag us. I'm at Belly to Birth, or Nicola.
It's Nicola Lay. You'll find me there.
Yeah.
Thank you. We hope that you've enjoyed this episode and that it's helped you on your own journey. We would love it if you would subscribe and leave us a review.
To learn more about our individual online or face-to-face courses or be mentored by us for your own birth, please see our show notes for the links to our programs.